when disaster strikes. Will you be ready?
Good evening, and we begin tonight with the monster hurricane and its deadly impact already.
When all hope is gone, will the government be there for you? If you're looking for ways to take your prepping to the next level, then you've come to the right place. Broadcasting from a secure and well-prepared location, it's time for Prepping 2.0. And now, please welcome authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 44 of Prepping 2.0. We're calling this one Food Preps 2.0. It's all you need to know. It's a preview of our book, me and Shelby's book, forthcoming book on this topic. Speaking of Shelby, I wanted to say hello to Shelby. Hello, Shelby.
Hello, Glenn. How are you today?
Oh, we're doing great. I am excited about this topic because this is one of those, pardon the somewhat pun, meat and potatoes topics.
You're so funny.
Topics for preppers, and that is food preps. And this isn't going to be some, you know, 52-minute thing like, you want to buy stuff on sale and all the obvious stuff. There'll be parts of that. But what this is a very systematic approach to food preps that takes into account what we've learned over the past 10 years. And like we say, it's going to be in a forthcoming book, nonfiction book. It'll probably be out, if I had to guess, early 2020. Who knows? It's impossible to predict when books come out because there are a lot of different factors. So we're going to write this book together. And this show is a preview of the book. And basically what we did is, now be careful because I'm about to say something that's going to sound like a boring thing, but it's really not. We're basically reading the table of contents, the outline of the book, and adding color commentary, if you will, and adding some nuggets of information. So don't think it's going to be a dry reading of a table of contents. It's going to be a very organized way to present this system. And Shelby, why do we call it Food Preps 2.0? What 2.0-ish aspect of food preps are we getting at in this?
Well, there's so much that has happened in the prepping world since in the last 10 years in regards to food preps that's really launched that whole, if you are into preserving food and making it so that you have a food supply, there's so much that has happened, and it's cool because it adds to your preps and you can integrate it into your, if you've already been doing the canning and the freezing that you were doing 10 years ago, some of the new things that are out there right now just add to that and make it much more of a full spectrum of how to prepare your food. I keep saying prepare your food, but it's true. But it's so much more than that. So I'm excited to talk about this outline. But I like to think of this outline as like the trailer to a movie.
Yeah, exactly.
So there you go.
And so we always do the top 100 things that go the quickest in a collapse. Item number 34 is what, Shelby?
Item number 34, again, is all of these things seem odd to me, but it makes sense. It's pet food. When a collapse happens and you can't go to a store, that includes the pet store. And if you have pets, however they are a role in your life, you need to be able to feed them, and they will starve very quickly. And you and I have experienced this. And if you have had pets for a long time, you need to be prepared for this. When you change a dog or a cat or any animal's diet drastically, there will be a reaction, just like there is with you and I, Glenn. If we do a huge, try some crazy new food, you might get some a little bit of a gurgly stomach there. So something to think about there. One thing we've thought about, let me just throw this out there, and we'll talk about it a little bit more later, is how to prep and to preserve some supply of pet food. And that doesn't just include dogs and cats. That includes any livestock you may have, chickens, ducks, turkeys, any of those things. You need to be able to think about how you can provide for them, those animals, especially if those animals are actually part of your food supply. So big things to think about there. And yeah, so if you ever want to see that list, I encourage you to go to our website, prepping2-0.com, lower right, top 100 things that disappear in a collapse situation.
You bet. And this topic of food preps is such a big one. And we quite honestly have so much, I'm going to say it, cool stuff to say, helpful, informative stuff to say, that we want to just jump right into it. As usual, we will do as much as we can in the regular segment, which is for those folks that are listening on the radio and also on the regular show, Podbean and iTunes and all that other stuff. And then we'll finish up the topic on the after show, which is kind of the second half of the show. And that's the part that's available exclusively to Patreon supporters. Thank you, Patreon supporters. So Those of you listening on the regular show are going to get about half this. Sorry, that's just the way it ends up doing. We have hard breaks for the radio show. It's just kind of the deal. So, you know, it's $2 a month to be a Patreon supporter, and you're going to get a lot of cool information and other cool stuff that we won't go into now. Let's see. The introduction. This is doable.
Yeah. Food preps are very, very doable. I think where people get hung up, Glenn, is they get like overwhelmed. It's like, once you start looking into it and you start Googling it, looking on YouTube, it's overwhelming. And you and I have both been guilty of that. Yes. What would you say?
Oh, absolutely. It's one of these things where I sit there and I always think about the team and the families. And I pull out a calculator, which is simultaneously a bad idea and a good idea when it comes to this. And I start figuring out, and we'll talk about this later, the number of calories everybody needs every day, which is more than you think, by the way, when you're out gunfighting and stuff. But you look at the number of calories and the number of people and the number of days, and then you say, oh my goodness, I need so much food. This is not possible. But see, it's the same thing with everything else in prepping. You can say, oh my goodness, I need all this stuff, and I don't have it right now, and at my daily pace, it's going to take me a while to get it done, and freak out. Well, here's the thing. If you're listening to this, you're a prepper 2.0. You've got past the mental hurdle of, oh my goodness, drinking from a fire hose, this can't be done. You said, all right, we're just going to slog through it, and we're going to chip away, and we're going to get her done. And so that hurdle is probably not a problem for you, but just don't worry about getting it done, because here's the thing, anything you do is better than nothing, and anything you do is better than 90%+ of the population. So there's no downside. It's not like, you know, Glenn and Shelby are gonna like fly in on a helicopter with a clipboard and evaluate you and like how much did you get done on this, and you don't get a gold star if you didn't do it right. Nothing like that, because you can pace yourself. You are a classic example, and you talk about it in book one of your books, A Great State, about pacing yourself. Talk to people about that, because that's really reassuring.
Well, pace yourself, and I had to pace myself when I first started doing this, and so did my main character, Julie, in my books, and it's a great example. Me as a one-woman show trying to prep, I can't do it all. I just can't. And so if you give yourself that to rest on, you can't do it all instantaneously. No one can unless you have a gazillion dollars, but you can do a little bit at a time. And back when I was on a super, super tight budget, $10 a week, what can I do with $10 a week? I can buy some cans of tuna. I can buy some dehydrated milk. I can buy, you know, some prep food that I can put away. And if you do that at $10 a week, you can actually over the course of a year, you can make a pretty good dent in preps. And like what you just said, Glenn, is you are 10 paces ahead of everyone else out there than your neighbors or anybody else. If you can do that a little bit every week. The other thing, and you and I had a conversation, we have a neighbor that we drive by his house every day, every time we leave our property. You would look at his property and you can just tell he's squared away. He's got a huge solar setup, a huge garden, tons and tons of fruit trees, squared away house. He's got the equipment that he needs.
He's retired.
He's retired.
And he has plenty of money.
A lot of time.
So he can do anything, and money-wise.
And so we just drive by him every day and go, that's what we aspire to be.
Yeah.
We just had a conversation with him a couple days ago in his shed over an adult beverage. It was very nice.
He was
very hospitable, and he's overwhelmed. He's lived on this property. He and his wife retired there a couple years ago, and he goes, this is a lot of work, and just now, after 2 years of working really, really hard, I feel like I can breathe a little bit, and I feel like this thing isn't running me, but I'm running it, sort of a thing. So I say that to those of you out there, you might, if you're comparing yourself, you think about what you're aspiring to be, even that person that we aspired to be is like, no, you got to give yourself a time to take a breath, sort of a thing. So we want this book to be for you kind of a way to look at it as a system, find those layers that fit your life and where you're at the best, and do it a bite at a time. Perfection is very difficult to reach. Not very many people have reached it, if any. calm down. You got this, and we're gonna walk you through it just like we've had to do to ourselves. We are not, by us saying this, we are not perfect at this by any stretch. We're actually kind of guilty of like taking on too much. So yeah,
exactly. You know, and to add to that, when you pace yourself, you get your system down, and we'll talk about that. Yeah, let's say you learn how to can. That's part of your system. We'll be talking about that more too. Well, once you have your system down and you've got some skills, it's not as big of a deal then as you pace yourself to just add to that and do more canning. Plus, when the collapse hits, let's say you don't have enough food to feed, you know, your entire village or whatever. Well, you know how to can, and you got some skills, and you can do this. So it's not just having a warehouse full of stuff. That's not the end goal. It's about learning things. It's about having this system. It's about having stuff, yes, but it's about being able to get more stuff after the collapse, preserve more stuff. And then this is one of the things no prepper books talk about nonfiction wise, and that is, how do you cook this stuff? You know, off-grid stuff. We'll be talking about that too. See, it's an entire system, from planning how you're going to buy stuff and preserve stuff to how you're going to cook it, how you're going to store it. It's an entire system that we've learned over the past 10 years by trial and error. Yeah, well, here's an obvious question, but we should ask it anyway in case folks are really, really new to this and they don't know. Shelby, why even store up food? Why is this even a thing?
Well, and I think if you're listening to this, you have an answer of some kind, and they're all correct. When a collapse happens, whether it be a natural disaster, whether it be a political disaster, whether it be a socioeconomic, whatever, the grocery stores shut down. Why do the grocery stores quickly shut down within a day to 3 days? Is because of supply chains cannot supply them, and or looting empties them, and supply chains can't get to them, or they're just downright destroyed. So, and your ability to get to those stores will be hindered by either, if it's in the city, by either some sort of obstacle or destroyed roads or blocked roads for some reason. If you're out in the country like we are, distance and or destroyed roads. So having a food supply on your property that is easily accessible, that is easily prepared, huge, huge.
Yep, because you yourself have to eat. Your family has to eat. If you have a mutual assistance group, a team or a neighborhood or whatever, you might be having to feed them, probably not entirely, but you may be partially feeding them. Another reason to have food is charity. You can give food away and help people. That comes with some downsides that we've discussed in previous shows. You can barter with food, which is huge. You might need antibiotics for your kid. And here's another thing, and this has downsides too. Buying security. What does that mean? Well, the motorcycle gang is going to kill you unless you give them food. It's kind of nice to have some food to give them. The downside of that is they're probably going to come back the next day and kill you anyway. So I'm not saying that. But I mean, you can maybe get yourself out of some scrapes if you've got some stuff to give away. And how do you have stuff to give away? You have a food prep system. And that's what this show and this book is all about. Shelby, does one size fit all? I mean, is there one plan that's going to work for everybody out there?
No, there is not. And that just goes with pure geography. If you live in an urban city, how you prep is going to be very different than if you live in the suburbs, than if you live in the rural country, than if you are, depending on what your financial situation is, if you are on a really fixed budget, or if you have, you know, some extra that you can put some extra finances into this. But no matter what your situation is, wherever you live, whatever your financial status is, to be able to invest in some of these things, you'll get something out of this book. And we really encourage you to, again, find the layers. We try to come at this with an idea of layering. Find those strata that work for you and will work in your situation. And the flip side of this, people, especially when you and I post things on social media, people, when we put out ideas, people are like, well, that isn't going to work because of this, this, and this. And it's like, well, but that's a good example. That doesn't work for you, but if you, it could work for somebody else. We just try to put out ideas that people can grab if it would be useful to them.
Which is exactly right. And also a great segue into the scope of this show today, and also really the scope of the book. And that is, we're going to do the overview level only. We're going to put out ideas. We're going to give you things to think about. It is absolutely impossible to do a how-to manual on all these things. Canning alone would be a one-hour show, and really a show isn't that good because you need visual stuff. It would be like a book. There's a book out there that shows you everything, the Ball Canning Guide. We'll talk about that in a moment. So there are resources out there. So this is not a how-to step-by-step thing because it's too big of a topic. We want to give you, as I say, an overview level. The details are elsewhere. There's a million YouTube channels, and we'll have some in the back of this book when we do it, resources, particularly good channels, on how to do the details. So we're here to help you plan out your system that works, you know, in your situation. You can learn from our mistakes that I've made in particular over the past 10 years. And here's a cool thing. This isn't just about starting your system, because if you're listening to Prepping 2.0, this is probably not the first time you've ever thought about food preps. You're probably midway into your system. Whatever your system is, some of the ideas we have here are going to help you with a system you've already started. Maybe you change yours a little bit. Maybe you scrap it. I don't know. It's all up to you. It's all customizable because it's an overview level where one size doesn't fit all. So that's the idea, the scope of the book and the scope of this show. We want to let everybody know, if you were sitting here waiting to find out what temperature and how long you need to cook raw pork in a canner, pressure canner for, go to YouTube. There's your answer. Yeah, there you go. Well, Shelby, you know, we call this show, and I think we're probably going to call the book, honestly. By the way, we had Patreons suggest names for this book, which was really cool. It might be something like Food Preps 2.0. I think you got it this earlier, now that I think about it. The 2.0 aspect of this, there's some new technology, there's some lower costs, and there's things we've learned. So I guess we've already covered that, so my bad. So the next topic is planning your food prep system. The most important word in that sentence is system. It's a system. Stuff fits together. It's from beginning to end, because the final product is you having enough food that can actually be eaten for your folks. And so that's the thing. So here's what we'll cover. We'll cover the planning of the storage, which is a bigger deal than you think. Storage planning, food selection criteria. That's pretty important. Layering, we're going to talk about that all over the place. Those of you who've listened to the show and listened to what Shelby said a few minutes ago, layering is you've got different stuff that has different uses, basically, and they're all mixed up together. So if you need like short-term food, like MREs, because you're in a gunfight and you can't exactly go and like cut up some radishes out of the greenhouse, you've got that. And then you've got long-term stuff, you know, rice and beans for an anchor meal for your mutual assistance group, and everything in between. There, all these are layers, and we're huge on layering because it's the only way to do it. There's a multi-dimensional problem to solve, and you got to have multi-dimensions to it. We'll talk about preservation methods. That's really kind of the heart of the book. Freeze drying, dehydrating, canning, store-bought food, which is a preservation method. I know, it sounds crazy. We'll get into that. And then non-commercial food sources. Shelby, what are a couple non-commercial food sources?
Well, gardening, yeah, is one of them. Bartering with neighbors, farmers markets, and as well as your own. I mean, if you have your own flock of chickens, your own gaggle of turkeys, or whatever, those non-commercial things for when those non-commercial sources are not available.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
And then preparing them in a collapse.
Exactly. Talk a little bit about that.
Here's where we're learning in all of this is that non-commercial, when we as a culture, we've become very dependent on commercial food sources. So when we don't have that, there's a skill level that you need to come up with to be able to garden. That's a skill to be able to prepare it and preserve it from, you know, that whole farm to table. Well, we're farm to preservation. And so that includes your vegetables, your fruits, your any poultry or livestock that you may have, how to prepare it and keep it alive, and then harvest it and preserve it so that you have it in a sustainable cycle, that sort of way. That's something that's one of those lost ways. So we're going to hit on that. All of these we're going to hit high level in our books. Why? You've said it already. I'm going to say it in our books. In our book, you've said it already, there's 10,000 YouTube videos out there. There's other people out there that have covered these topics super well. We're just kind of bringing it all together and showing you layers. So, so we've got a lot to talk about.
Yeah, we do. And we're probably going to have a pretty lengthy after show with some good stuff on it. The next thing we want to talk about is storage planning your storage. you got to do it now because it affects absolutely everything. If you don't have a place to put stuff or a plan for more space to put stuff, it's going to affect everything. And if you have a place to store stuff that is not got some temperature controls on it and that sort of thing, that's going to affect what you can store and everything else. So you've got to start with thinking about storage. And, you know, the first question is, how much can you store? And that would be looking at your current situation. Let's say you live in an apartment. The answer is not very much, and that's going to dictate a lot of stuff. How much can you store? Now, if you live on a ranch or a homestead, the answer to how much can you store is probably a different answer, and then that means you can store more stuff, and that affects your system and basically how hard you do your food preps, how vigorous you are, because you can store for it. Temperature control is important. Here's another thing that's really important and often overlooked when it comes to storage of food preps. Stealth. If you've got a bunch of, those 27-gallon black tubs from Costco with the yellow lids, and they're all marked like rice and beans, and they're sitting on your corner in the suburbs, that's a problem. You got to not only store stuff, but you got to figure out a way that people don't know that you're storing stuff, right? And that might require it being inside a building or something like that. There are offsite storage options. If you have a bug out location, you want to, you know, store food there. That's going to be part of your storage thing. You might get a rental unit. This is something I talk about in 299 days. I got a rental unit. I think it was $50 a month, and I stored a ton of food in it. By the way, most storage units say you can't store food in there, and they have cameras. So when you bring stuff in, just like kind of hide it, you know, get used to being stealthy and being a little bit undercover. Don't walk in with a bunch of 50-pound bags of rice because you get busted. And then part of it, when it comes to offsite food storage, you have to think about how do you transport all this stuff. Now, it might be easy. It might be little bits at a time in the back of your car. Okay, at least you thought about it. But if you're talking about a lot of stuff, you're going to need to think about trailers and tow weights and tongue weights, something I didn't know before until, you know, we dealt with this
a year ago. Yeah,
exactly. And then, Shelby, what's the U-Haul solution to all of this? This is kind of a sneaky, kind of clever thing. I think you came up with it. Tell us about U-Haul when it comes to transporting food, which again gets to your food storage part.
You tossed me a bone there. I hope I get it right, because I hope I'm saying it right. Well, basically, you can rent a U-Haul trailer, truck, whatever, to do a one-way rental. And in a collapse, I don't think they're going to, you know, if you've done a weekend rental and by the end of the weekend, the collapse is in full bore and the U-Haul store has been, you know, basically
looted and ransacked.
Yeah, they're not. I'm not too worried about getting that rental back on time. Are you?
Exactly right. It's like, yeah, it's a one-way rental. And if you can't get it back to them, okay, you tried. Now, of course, in peacetime, if you need to move a bunch of stuff, you obviously return the U-Haul. But don't forget, you know, U-Hauls are a great way to move a ton of stuff to some secondary location. Hopefully, you're spreading out your food preps different places. It's kind of a luxury to have like three places to put food. But, you know, the eggs in one basket thing is all very, very true. So when you're thinking about storage, and you're thinking about offsite, you got to think about transportation.
Well, and let's just say this, but going back to the U-Haul thing, we are big believers in following the law when it comes to prepping. So on that note, join us on the other side after the break.
We'll be right back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate right after this.
PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Looking to meet other like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own prepper group? Already have a group? Join PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet has gathered the biggest names in the industry to help unite preppers everywhere. Join John Jacob Schmidt, Scott Hunt, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, Glenn Tate, Shelby Gallagher, Charlie Hogwood, Samuel Culper, Survivor Jane, Rick Austin, Franklin Horton, Ryan Mitchell, and Brian Duff. Our team is united. Check us out at PrepperNet. .com. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. PrepperNet.com.
And we're back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Welcome back, everyone. Shelby Gallagher here, joined by my co-host in life as well as this radio show program. Glenn Tate. Hello, Glenn.
Hello there.
So we want to jump right in here that we just talked about transporting food, transporting supplies. Now we want to kind of talk about food selection. And this is, again, this is a prepping 2.0 thing. When it comes to choosing foods for your preps, I think one of the number one criteria you need to think about is cost. You can spend a lot of money out there on prepared foods, on foods that are specifically for prepping, that sort of thing. And feel free, if you've got the resources to do that. I don't think it is wise to do your entire food selection that way, but we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about how to do this on a budget. Penny pinching, if I've done that, I know what that's like to do that. But also, there's this flip side of that coin. And jump in here, Glenn, if you want. Prepping saves you money. What does that mean?
You're already saving money by prepping because you're buying beans, for example. And by the way, the prices I use are kind of like general things, circa, you know, summer of 2019. Sometimes people jump on us and they go, well, at my store, it's 5 cents a pound more expensive. You guys don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, we do. Anyway, so you're already saving money. So that is a lead in to say this. And this is a pet peeve of mine. Don't penny pinch when it comes to prepping. And there's obviously reasonable cost-cutting things you can do. Don't go buy, you know, $19 a pound filet mignon and then, like, put it in a smoker. We'll talk about that in a moment. So that's obviously not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is people who, for example, and I did this. Here's my mistakes. This is so cool because it's I can tell you what I did wrong. I got, you know, 50 pounds of pinto beans, for example. I drove all around town, tried to find the cheapest place so I could, like, get on the interwebs and brag to my friends about how I paid, making these numbers up, 17 cents a pound for beans instead of those dummies who paid 18 cents a pound. Well, keep in mind what the total cost savings is. Here's why it was dumb for me to do that. The 50-pound bag, I had to then scoop into smaller bags to vacuum seal. And as I was scooping them into these smaller bags, I was spilling a bunch of them. And guess what? Next week, I had a rat in the basement because I spilled beans, tried to sweep them up. It's not the end of the world to buy a 1-pound bag of beans and pay a total of like $10 more for 50 pounds if you can take that 1-pound bag and you just snip the top of it so the air comes out. We'll talk about this in a moment with vacuum sealing. And you vacuum seal it and you don't spill a bunch of stuff. It reminds me of those people who will, and they're usually old people, they'll drive all over town to find gasoline for a penny a gallon less, and they just spent their entire Saturday and a bunch of, ironically, gas money going and saving it. So keep in mind total cost and not just, you know, that whole get on Instagram and tell everybody how cheap you got something. It's a balance. There's reasonableness. And so my point is you're already saving money when you prep because you can eat this stuff so, so cheaply later. Don't lose your mind on cost.
But let me jump in here too. Again, there's always a flip side to some of these coins. You and I will defend voraciously. Prepping saves you money because, and this is how it does. Here's how I kind of, to completely negate what you just said, I pay a pinch to prep. I go out and I find, especially during the summer season when it's harvest time everywhere, I go to those fruit stands or whatever and I find really cheap fruit because it's overruns, it's that sort of thing, and I preserve it. I have just preserved fresh, awesome vegetables and fruit at that cost, super cheap. And I'll tell you this, in a collapse, that fresh fruit that is now preserved is worth a lot. Talk to people who have survived collapses, what they would do for a fresh orange and how it was like eating candy or, you know, that sort of a thing. So the value of food, even at just store-bought prices now, will quadruple in a collapse. And if you're able to find some good deals, we're not talking, please do not drive all over creation to find, you know, 10 cents or less for cherries or whatever. But yeah, if you're able to find cheap fruit, cheap fresh things and able to preserve them, do it if you can. But don't kill yourself and don't make it cost ineffective by doing so.
And what I'm talking about is somebody that goes out and says, I just bought a set of canning equipment and, oh, peaches are 10 cents a pound less if I buy 50 pounds. I'm going to get around to canning that next week. And then next week, they've got their house overrun with fruit flies because the 50 pounds of peaches rotted. So that's exactly the kind of reasonableness I'm talking about. Another thing when it comes to food selection criteria is don't try to exactly replicate your peacetime food. If you eat salad, for example, a lot, which you should, it's good for you, don't try to freeze dry lettuce to make salad.
Work.
Right? You can't have your exact peacetime food in a prepping situation. We don't eat a lot of beans and rice now in peacetime. We're gonna in a war. Now, here's the flip side to all that. You should prep as many, and what I'm gonna say is about to contradict what I just said. You should, to the extent possible, try to prep as many familiar foods as possible, because your tummy is not going to deal well with huge switches in foods. And this happened to me team weekend. We're out there training. I got a bunch of food. I was in a hurry. I didn't have any time. I got a bunch of food that I thought would work. I ate a bunch of food that I normally don't eat, and I just kind of felt sick and crappy. So you gotta to the extent possible, familiar foods. That being said, don't try to replicate
and
peacetime food.
I'm going to toot my own horn here. I swooped right in and brought you awesome food that
you're
familiar with. I can't. Shelby saved the day.
I know. And you brought, by the way, some of our own freeze-dried eggs with bacon and cheese that we reconstituted. And the team was like, oh my goodness, this is like fresh scrambled eggs. So good on you. Yeah, thank you.
It was good.
What's another factor on food selection?
Ease of preparing. And again, this is something we'll really flesh out in the book, probably quite a bit. Ease of preparing. If you are prepping foods that require, I'm just going to use an example. I just think of like pancake mix. So I'm going to use that because you use that a lot in your books, and people always talk about your pancake mix. Well, typical pancake mix, typical, I'm not saying all of them, require some oil or butter, an egg or two, some milk. Those are hard, sometimes difficult things to get into in a collapse. So I've had a conversation with myself and with you. It's like, I need to, for those collapse preps, find those foods that all I need is hot water.
Yes.
That is hard to do, but it's so much easier these days than it was just even 3 or 4 years ago. 3 or 4 years ago to find, I don't know, a pancake mix that just took water. Not the greatest pancakes, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
And so what we have figured out is how to prepare and to preserve eggs, how to preserve milk, and we're working on the oil thing, because oils don't preserve really well. So that's just one example, but how to have a food supply so that for those emergency moments when all you need is water. Now, in a collapse situation, if you've got your layering going, you've got a garden or something like that going so that you don't need to rely solely on just water. But you need to think about that. In an initial collapse, in those first days, especially a natural disaster, if you have your water supply, that's your answer right there. If you have a water supply, you then have a food supply, which is an awesome, awesome insurance, if you ask me. What do you think?
Yeah, and in the books, I talk about my prepping strategy was and still is that everything should just require hot water. There are a couple exceptions to that. But hot water is the thing, because you're not going to have a ton of energy. You're not going to have a ton of, you know, your stove probably doesn't work. You're not going to probably have a microwave. So energy is a question. There are security concerns. If you have to bake a souffle in a solar oven and be walking around for 8 hours checking on it, you're probably going to get sniped. So there are security concerns. If you've got smoke, if you've got a generator going, you don't want to have a big production when it comes to preparing this food that you've stored. And there are plenty of great foods that only require boiling water. There are plenty of great foods that you just open a can or open a package and grab a spoon and start eating them with absolutely no preparation required. And you touched on the other thing, which is additional ingredients. Nothing worse than, okay, the world's collapsed and you pull out that brownie mix and you're like, yes, I got my Jet Boil camp stove. I got some water. My kids are going to have brownies. Awesome. And you look on the thing and it says, you need eggs. That's a terrible thing. Avoid that. What's another criteria for food selection, Shelby?
Another one that's big for me is shelf life.
Yes.
And that's where, we're going to bring this out a lot in the book, because if you go back to, I just think about my parents' and grandparents' food food preservation was freezing and canning and maybe some dehydrating and that sort of thing. And all of those were good, and all of those have, they have stood the test of time. People have been canning and freezing for generations. But again, in the last 10 years, we've had some really great increases in technology. When you can, the shelf life, typically depending on the product, is anywhere from 2 to 5 years. So in a collapse situation, it's gonna degrade. You need to be rotating that food, and you need to be very mindful and have that system going, which you should. But for those deep preps where I'm like, I just want to put it away and earmark it just for when the collapse happens, so all I have to do is add water. We have a new, there, we'll talk more about that, how to do that. It's great. So there's shelf life. You need to consider that. And if there's a shelf life to your food preps, how to get that rotating in and out of your meals. And one nice thing, when you're rotating it, you are familiar with the foods that you've prepped, so that you don't have that upset stomach when the collapse happens.
Exactly. If you're canning pears that you grow on your fruit trees, and that canning, and by the way, it might last, it might be like edible for 10 years, but it's going to be really gross and disgusting, and probably no one's going to want to eat it because the texture is going to go. And then if you have your pantry and you have your canned pears, once a year you go through all your pears and you're eating pears, which are delicious with cottage cheese, by the way, and you're doing that kind of stuff in peacetime, you're rotating, you're building up your skills on canning, and you're getting used to those sorts of food, and you're saving money. That was the thing about prepping, saves money. So that is ideal. Now, I don't think that's always the situation, because I don't see myself on a Saturday night when I've been mowing the lawn all day and I'm really hungry, going and cutting open a vacuum sealed bag of beans and rice and eating that. So there are limits to rotating food, but you should at least, it should be one of the criteria, you know, buy foods that you're going to eat and rotate if at all possible, and then also have layering, also have other kinds of food that you're probably not going to eat constantly, like beans and rice and that kind of stuff. So that's what the rotation is with this. And then we talked about storage space as a criteria. Here's how it specifically relates to buying kinds of foods. I believe, and I don't know, people may disagree, you should store physically dense foods. For example, Fruit Loops are delicious, by the way. Love Fruit Loops.
And they don't have gluten, or do they?
They don't have gluten.
Oh, see, that's, and that's important. That's why you can eat them. That's right.
I have a food allergy. We'll talk more about that. They have a lot of air in them, right? And you can vacuum seal them, but you're still basically taking up all that tub space in, let's say, your food storage shed that you've spent a lot of money building this shed and blah, blah, blah. And you're storing a bunch of air. Don't do that. I think physically dense foods are the way to go. Most foods are physically dense. And you're going to want, speaking of density, calorie dense and nutrition dense foods. Maybe you really love eating...
Which does not include... That does not include Fruit Loops.
It does not include Fruit Loops. No, not at all. Maybe you really love popcorn. Well, are you going to go and vacuum seal a bunch of popped popcorn, assuming it even lasts? Don't know if it does. You've got a space waste, and you've also wasted a bunch of calories and nutrition. I think one of the things you should really prep for and store in a bigger proportion than maybe what you eat in peacetime is meat. Meat is calorie rich, it is nutrition rich, and it's going to be that anchor for then all the other stuff, for the beans and rice that you add to it. You gotta, and by the way, fat is your friend in a collapse. Salt is your friend in a collapse. And yes, sugar is your friend in a collapse. We'll get to that. But just keep that in mind. Once again, dropping your normalcy bias about food you normally eat. Here's a classic example, Spam. Do I normally eat Spam? Nope. I went to Hawaii one time and I had it with eggs because all the locals were, and it was delicious. And okay, I ate it once. I have a bunch of Spam. It's calorie rich, it's nutrition rich, and it's got a bunch of salt in it that's going to be a good thing, because when you're out training and patrolling and cutting wood and doing all the stuff you're going to do in a collapse, farming, carrying water jugs around, you're going to need salt. So think about calorie rich and physically dense foods. Which, speaking of calorie rich, what's a next food criteria that people often overlook in this?
Well, calories, and going back to that, we live in a very, I joke about this and I say this all the time, pristine conditions where we have almost every food available to us that we want. and we as an American culture don't exercise much. We lead very sedentary lifestyles. When that all flips, when we don't have the calories available to us and we're expending them, we will need way more calories than we think, because we will have to travel by foot. We will have to build things. We will have to lift things. We will have to be moving around so much more. So yes, that you will need those calories. You will burn them like you've never burned before. I think, you know, when you talk to somebody who is, I don't know, over 80, they will tell you about, oh yeah, when they were kids, they would work on the farm all day long or whatever. And then they would eat like, you know, a whole bunch of bacon, a whole bunch of eggs, and a whole bunch of potatoes. And they could never eat that now because they would be incredibly obese. That's what it will be like. When you talk to that generation of people, they will tell you about how they burned calories because of just physical labor and work that they would do in their everyday life. That will be what happens to us in this current generation in a collapse. And it will surprise us.
Yeah, and here's my experience from, I don't know, last weekend, training with the team, about 45 pounds of gear, did a 1 mile hike, march, whatever you want to call it, and then lightened the load somewhat, still body armor and everything else, and spent all day doing training, doing scenarios, moving, communicating, running a little bit. I'm telling you, I could not eat enough. I could not stop eating. I could not get enough food. Chopping wood, for example, for someone my size is about 500 calories an hour. I consider some of the stuff we did for parts of that day to be analogous to cutting wood. I would go through, 3,500 calories is child's play. When I'm training, 4,000 calories. I could even see 45. I'm 6'2", so there's that. But you will go through so many more calories than you think when these, 1 year supply freeze dry things. And if you have $6,000, go to Costco and maybe get that. I don't know. That'd be a good start.
It's not $6,000. Those are, I am a proponent of those. Those can range between $50 to $100. I think those are a great way to
put it. No, $6,000 for the whole year supply.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Got it.
Yeah. $6,000. You're so used to me exaggerating. You assume
I am. I need to correct you on that, 'cause I don't want to discourage people. I think if you're going to just me jumping in there, I think a great way to start prepping for, I don't know where to start. One of those freeze-dried buckets with 100 meals.
The 72-hour thing?
Yeah. I think those are great for just to get your brain started on the whole process. I'm sorry, but go ahead.
No, that's exactly right. But it'll sit there and it'll say, for the average person with a 2,000-calorie-a-day diet, this will take care of them. Let me tell you, folks, especially men, 2,000 calories is like breakfast and lunch. I've eaten 4 MREs a day when I've been out in the field, and that's 4,800 calories. And so you're going to need way more calories than you think, especially when you're active. You're going to have more mouths to feed than you think, because, and we talked about this, episode 7 was one of our better episodes, I got to say, about when everybody comes over to your place in a collapse and what do you do with it. Everybody and their dog is going to remember that crazy uncle of theirs who was a prepper. That would be you. And they're going to come around. And so you're going to have more people to feed than you think. Once again, that's a food selection criteria. And, part of the food selection criteria when it comes to people that are not currently in your family but might be coming into your care and feeding are food allergies. I happen to be intolerant to gluten. It makes me sneeze a lot and very uncomfortable. I don't die or anything like that.
And you're being nice. I mean, you don't feel good, and it's not just sneezy and achy. It's digestion and all of that for about 24 to 48 hours.
Yeah, it's a problem.
It is a problem. I'm glad it's not one of those allergies that it makes your throat swell up and you stop breathing. But if we're in a collapse situation and you're out for 48 hours, that's a big deal.
One of my team guys, mushrooms, they make him sick. And so when you've got the, once again, food selection criteria, you're going and you're getting all the canned tomato or the spaghetti sauce, which, by the way, is a fabulous thing to prep. We'll talk about that more. Make sure it doesn't have mushrooms in it. You got to think about food allergies. Try to keep things as plain Jane as possible. You can always add, maybe somebody has some mushrooms they're growing, and you can always add fresh things to it. You can always add spices and herbs. More on that in a moment too. So keep it base, because you got food allergy issues. It keeps costs down too.
To your allergies. Obviously, yeah. I am not going to put aside 100 pounds of flour because, you are in our household, if you have a nut allergy, that's the big one that can be sometimes deadly, or the strawberry one, or any sort of those. If you have an allergy, prep for that. I know you're not weak for that, but you're being smart about that. It's so funny because every now and then we'll put out there on social media that you're gluten intolerant. People are like, oh, you're just a little...
like a hippie or something?
Yeah, hippie, somebody who just wants your specialized whatever. Nope, it's true. It's not good when he eats gluten, and we prep that way. I don't... We prep other ways.
Stuff.
Yeah. And let me just ask this too, or not ask this, but say this. Prep food... your prep food, that you're preserving and storing, really is for your first 6 months after a collapse. That which will keep you sustained for the first 6 months of the awfulness.
Excellent point.
But at that point, you can't store enough. You're going to run out of storage space. If, let's just say, a four-member family, that to store away that many meals for 6 months, you're going to find out really quickly, it's a lot of space. At that point, you need to start in your preps, in your layers, adding in, what can I do to sustain? I need to think about the gardening, the hunting, or the chickens, the whatever that you can now perpetuate, so that you know what I mean? So that you're not having to keep going to freeze-dried, to canned, to those foods that you've stashed away.
An excellent criterion to think about. You're really trying to get through the first 6 months, and that's kind of like two seasons, so then hopefully you can start growing food. By the way, another way to get food is to have a security team and get hired by people, and they feed you to do it too. That's another way of getting food. But, and a last thing on the food selection criteria that people often overlook, I've alluded to this, but that is salt and electrolytes. Salt's so terrible. Okay, if you're sitting in a cubicle and you live in a suburb, you probably shouldn't have as much salt. We have too much salt in our food. I get it, blah, blah, blah. I totally get it. Again, when you're out doing what I was doing last weekend as the most recent example, you know, the underlayer of my combat shirt was caked with salt. I mean, and it wasn't even hot out. It's Western Washington. So you need salt. Salt has a terrible bad rap. You also need electrolytes. Now, that ideally comes in your foods. There are all kinds of electrolyte things, like for runners. Costco sometimes has these things. They're called, oral IVs, which just basically mean, you know, it's an IV. It's got all your Gatorade. Okay, that's easy. How about Gatorade? It's got sugar and electrolytes, two things you need. Once again, don't prep your peacetime eating habits, or in this case, drinking habits, right, of, you know, Gatorade. Oh, I don't drink Gatorade. I drink Diet Pop or whatever. Okay, no Diet Pop, Gatorade. You're going to need the sugar. You're going to need to live kind of like your grandparents live. You were talking about people eating, you know, bacon and all that kind of stuff. So those are, with 3 minutes left or so, 2 minutes left, some food selection criteria. One of the things we're huge on is layering. We have talked about the concept of it. Now, I would like to give you some examples of what we're talking about, because it relates to the kind of food you're going to buy. One of the, I don't know, uses of food, for lack of a better term, is quick, portable food. I'm a huge fan of MREs, absolutely huge fan. I love them. I think they taste good. They have a shelf life of 15 years if you keep them temperature controlled. They are great for doing what I was doing last weekend. When you're out in the field and somebody says, let's bake a souffle, you need to hit them on the side of the head. I mean, that's just dumb.
I will say this, in all of my backpacking days and when I was younger, I've had a really awesome peach cobbler out in the middle of the woods.
Okay.
You can do it, but I'm just saying, but that's,
no,
it's a layer.
No one was shooting at you.
No one was shooting at me, but there were bears nearby. But yeah, here's the thing. That's a layer, and that's a decadence thing. That is if you have the chance. But what else is there? The first 10 days, what's that all?
Yeah, well, and we have a minute, and then we're gonna leave. Our regular show folks are gonna, you know, have to, there's more in the after show. We came up with something on the team. Instead of MREs, which are meals ready to eat, we came up with FREs, which is food ready to eat. And the member of our team, well, one of the members of our team with a former special operations background, said, the first 10 days of this, you're not going to be cooking food, guys. You know that, right? And I thought about it, and I said, yeah, we're not going to be, you know, barbecue and hamburgers and stuff like that. So what we do is we have every guy on the team has 10 days worth of food ready to eat, canned food, packaged food, No preparation necessary. Open a can, open a bag, grab a spoon, and eat it, because those first 10 days, whether you're setting up water supplies or whether you're fighting a war, the first 10 days, you need to have food ready to eat. That closes us out. Shelby, take us out with your great quote.
Failing to prepare is preparing to fail. Have a great week, everyone.
You've been listening to Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate. All of the fun and easy prepping information heard on this podcast can be found online at prepping2-0.com. You can also find out more about Glenn's books online at 299days.com and about Shelby's books online at agreatstate.com. Until next time, be smart, be safe, and be prepared.